Hello there, everyone, and welcome to Geek Therapeutics Podcast. I am Cornell Kritz here with my co-host, Alicia.
Hi, everybody. It's Alicia, and here we are today with another great interview from a really unique, fun friend from across the pond, but not the pond that we all think we're across from, but the other side of the West Coast of our country, on that side of the ocean. And today, Fahd, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name's Fahd. I'm here from Australia, from Canberra, Australia, across the ocean. I've been a DM for 30 years and decided to get involved with Geek Therapeutics. So here I am.
I think that's great that you're a DM who has come in and looked at Geek Therapeutics as a tool that you to use Geek Therapy as a DM instead of being one of our clinicians who are using it. So where can we find anything like publication or anything like that, if you're doing anything like that? And what, outside of the Geek Therapy universe, what games do you enjoy?
Well, outside of the Geek Therapy universe, I love board games. I have a penchant to go on to and purchase independent board games, usually small labels, cooperative board games mostly, use Kickstarter actually. A lot. I've backed about half a dozen different games, and it's great fun. Besides being a DM, that's my passion.
That's awesome. So tell me about where was your inspiration moment, your eureka moment when it came to getting involved with games and everything like that? What game was it that just made you like, oh my God, I love this, and this is part of my life now?
When I was a little kid, I used to play cards a lot with my parents. Mm-hmm. And it was, we're going back a bit. It was the way of the family connecting and getting together and being social. And we used it also to play with friends and other people. And it was just, that was my sort of introduction from a very young age into playing games, and playing games to be social and use that as a social interaction. And then from there, I actually got into comics and started reading comics. I don't so much nowadays, but that was my next step. And I enjoyed the camaraderie I got at school from being able to read comics and then talk about them with other people all the time and go through, what was happening in the latest Batman or Superman or Marvel or whatever it might be that I was currently reading at the time. Wolverine was one of my favorites.
I was going to ask.
And then from there, I then went to not just cards with my parents, but getting onto other games. And it was really the cards that just got me into that social interaction that I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And then it just progressively got bigger and bigger and bigger, board games. And then one day at school, I would have been 18 at the time. A friend of mine said, "Do you want to play D&D? And I thought, never heard of that. This was when D&D had first started. This was first mm-hmm. edition D&D.
Oh, wow.
And he said, "Do you want to play?" And I said, "Oh, I'll give it a go." And that first game was oh my God, this is fantastic. I love it. And that was for me that sort of build up of being social with just these small little things to this D&D moment, where I could invent this whole world and I could immerse myself so completely. And then I've been hooked ever since. I've played every edition since, and many, many other different role-playing games as well.
As a person who's played every edition, and with the conversation of 5.5 or 6 coming out in the next fiscal year, is there an edition that you love and an edition that you wish might have never made it to publication?
Well, yes. My favorite character of all time comes from 3.5. He was a ranger cleric, and he had a charisma of 3 because I rolled my stats. It was 4d6, highest 3, and I rolled 4 ones. Just get that. So I had a charisma of 3.
Oh my gosh.
But he was technically elven royalty, but he was a half elf, and so they eventually called him the Spitting King because of his bad charisma and the fact that he was always spitting in front of everybody. So, but he was my absolute favorite character, and I think 3.5 to some degree was my favorite, but I do also really love 5e. I think 5e made it a lot easier for the younger generations and new players to learn the game and to quickly get involved in the game. They had this very small, I mean, if you get the starter set, it's a very small introduction set of rules. It's only, you know, 30 pages long or so. It's not this huge thick book that you have to learn. None of the other editions ever really did that. And so it became a lot easier to become involved in the game itself from that perspective. Fourth edition, I didn't like it. It went too far away from being the role-playing game to being a tabletop war game, to my mind anyway. And it
became too crunchy.
It really did become too crunchy, and I didn't enjoy that. I mean, I played it because it was out. I don't know what my thoughts are on 6th edition coming out. They've got so much material and they're producing so much for 5th edition at the moment. And everybody's, you know, really enjoying it. I'm a little worried that, you know, we're going to lose all of that material that's been developed because they're going to bring out a new edition, which may change the rules and how we're going to adapt all this old material. And yeah, we'll see.
I can feel the nerves around people that I play with and in this therapeutic setting, because we have introduced, like you said, all this great material. I'm hoping that with 6th edition, it's going to be, they've said it's going to be completely backwards compatible. And I hope they're getting away from the stigma that has happened with the original D&D and a lot of the concerns of racism and sexism and classism, and focusing more on removing that than adding more mechanics, because I think that it's already a very mechanically heavy driven game, that if we keep it mechanically the way it is and just remove the classes and the races and allow you to create your own character that's not confined by race, I hope with everything in me that that's the intention of whatever this new edition is going to be, and not really removing the great simplicity of D&D 5e. And I'm only a 5e player. I've never played in any other edition, but I do know that 4 was awful. 3 had a lot of rule-based play, and that 5e is kind of watered down and acceptable to everybody who, like you said, is new. So that's my hope with whatever this new edition is going to be.
Yeah, so that's my hope too. I really think that the world is changing so much that they've already changed elves to be non-binary, which is fantastic, and being able to change or be intersex even. And so they've already introduced that, and being able to change the whole concept of being defined by your race and your class, that's not a modern concept anymore. You're not defined by those things. You're not defined by a drow doesn't have to be evil. And I play my games in that way. Chromatic dragons and metallic dragons, for example, I don't have them as being good and evil. You know, metallic dragons are always considered good. Chromatic dragons are always considered evil in my world. There may be generally good or evil, but there are some who are the opposite.
Fed, can you tell us a little bit about your world and who you DM for and how you DM and how that connected you with Geek Therapeutics and the Tabletop, the Therapeutic Game Master program?
Yeah, sure. I'd been DMing for a long time, just locally with friends and at the local gaming shop, actually. And then, of course, COVID hit. What was that, in 2020? And of course, all of that shut down. You couldn't go out. You couldn't see people. I couldn't DM at the gaming shop. I couldn't do anything. And from that point, I started to miss it for a little while, and didn't know what to do, and got online and found Roll20, found Foundry, and went, oh, that's fantastic. And I started playing with both of them, and I decided that, well, you know, I've got to choose one. So I chose Roll20, not because Roll20 is better than Foundry or anything like that, or any of the other, Fantasy Fairgrounds, for example, is another one. Really, they're all really good systems. The reason I chose Roll20 in the end was simply because I thought that the investment in learning to use the system was slightly less than the others. Not that it was a better system or anything like that. I just thought it was easier for beginner players to get involved. And so that's why I chose Roll20 in the end. I then started to invest in Roll20 and thought, well, I'm going to start DMing on here and I'm going to start playing some games. So I started playing to begin with, just to learn the system and to see what was going on. And then from there, decided that I wanted to DM. The problem I found was that there wasn't any real schools for DMs out there to run on Roll20. So I started my own and called the DM Fad. And from there, I then developed sort of a little bit of a following of people who come along, and we get together, we learn how to DM in general, and use Roll20 for DMing is my particular focus for 5e. And through that, I met one of the other, a couple of people, one in particular, the DM Dave, who's also a Geek Therapeutics person, and he was working with veterans, and he asked me to run a couple of games for him, so I did. And then he turned around and said, look, I've got this great program called Geek Therapeutics. I'm involved in that. And I went, oh, that sounds really interesting. Send me the details. So he sent me the details, and I looked it up, and I went, oh, wow, that's really fantastic. I love the idea. I love the concept of being able to help people through Geeks Therapeutics, through DMing. And I thought back, and it made me actually look back on my own life and go, you know, I learned so much from role-playing and DMing that I never really internalized it. But it has taught me how to socialize, how to talk. It's taught me linguistics. It's taught me all sorts of different life skills that I didn't have at the time as a young person who was very introverted at the time and didn't want to speak to anyone and had no friends because he was a geek. And read comics, and I only had those very small number of people that I could speak to that were involved in that. But, you know, I really enjoyed doing that. But it taught me so much in the real world. So I thought, you know what, it'd be really nice to be able to actually apply that in my games. So I said, yeah, I'd love to do this, but of course I do DMing for a living, I run games. It doesn't pay very much. I can't afford it. So DM Dave sponsored me, and I am now a therapeutic GM, and I am commencing my geek specialist training. I have done the first few videos, and I'm about halfway through to getting my cultural competencies, and that's where it all started.
I have to say, as someone who has gotten to sit in on a couple of your sessions when we were streaming them before we went over to the recorded productions, that you are always a bright light and a fantastic character in how you play. It's you bring this energy to your cohort that is a lot of fun, and you think of things outside the box and how you approach things. And I think that's wonderful to have, not only as a player character, but as a DM. And I am so happy to hear the progress you're making through the program. So I just want to take a moment and give you that shout out, because it's a treat to have you with us.
Thank you. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's actually taught me a lot about DMing. It's amazing how much more I've gotten from the program, even though the program is really designed for therapists to learn how to be a DM. It's amazing how much I've learned from the program that I can introduce into me being a DM that has enhanced how I play and what I do. And it's made me very mindful of the fact that this can be a very powerful tool. And from that perspective, I've really tried to think about all the scenarios and how I play people and how I play things to make sure that I'm giving people the right influence in terms of the game and in terms of, well, how it translates into real life.
Mm-hmm. I think that is such a beautiful point to make, because while, yes, the program is geared towards therapists, it's also geared towards individuals like yourself who want to be more mindful. And when I talk about the program, I talk about the mindful approach to DMing is so imperative when you're wanting to create encounters and instances where your players leave that encounter thinking, wow, there was growth, or I thought about something I didn't think about before. And as you've gone through the program, were there moments for you in any of those DM sessions or guest games that was that aha moment of, wow, I came away and I felt growth, personal growth, or I felt that this is something that I've seen in my own players and that's amazing?
There are a couple of times where I've sort of gone, wow, that's really interesting. I mean, I have children on the spectrum and children who are still working out their sexuality. So I've been always very open to thinking about those things in life, because I'm living it as well. But it wasn't something that I had realistically applied to games a lot prior to doing this course. I mean, I was mindful of the fact personally, but didn't necessarily apply it directly. It was indirectly applied to the game. So I never was sexist or anything like that, and I was never, you know, making any racial slurs or anything like that in my games. But it wasn't something that I had directly applied within the games to be a learning moment. And it was very interesting a couple of times during our role play where it became quite apparent that there was the potential to have racial differences actually causing issues, and to be mindful of the fact that just because they're a kobold or a goblin or a whatever it might be doesn't mean that they have to be evil or nasty or horrible. And the parallels between that and in the past how we may have treated certain indigenous races from various countries, it kind of, that was kind of like a big aha moment for me. And it's like, oh yeah, I really got to make sure that I don't do that within the game.
That's
everybody gets treated equally. Everybody has a chance to negotiate. It doesn't just have to be a fight because they are goblins who are supposed to be evil or whatever.
That's really powerful. And that's great to see that you're bringing that into your campaigns and into your practice with DMing, because it's something I feel was done correct with Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft is that not these traditionally evil races are not inherently evil. There are outside influences that brought them to what they were doing, and that there's a reason behind most villains, that there's, you know, that there's a, no one is just flat out evil. And yes, there are some flat out evil beings with stuff like old gods and stuff like that, because that's their nature. But they in turn influence and drive others mad. So there, I like that you're bringing that in, and that there's always room to negotiate. That is a powerful thing. That the power of negotiation and the power of the word, the power of voice and speech is important.
Fawn, have you been able to...
Absolutely.
Oh, sorry, my bad, y'all. Have you been able to share with people that you are a certified therapeutic game master? And if so, what has been the reception of that? Has there been any pushback or weirdness?
No, actually, I have... My family are really supportive, which is fantastic. They love that I'm doing this and that I'm getting some personal growth out of it. So they're really, really supportive of me doing this. I just received in the mail my therapeutic GM badge and pin just last week. So that was really cool. It took a long time to get over here, a long way across the sea, across the ocean. But it did arrive, and I have actually shared it with quite a few people now, including the people that I play on Roll20 with, and I have several paid games. I actually get paid for my games nowadays to run them. And the main reason behind that is I often found that, and I did play, and I do still run some free games, but with free games, I often found that you didn't get the investment from individuals coming back week after week to want to play. So it was really difficult to run a campaign because you constantly had to introduce new people. You constantly had people dropping out. And so there was this continual shift of group dynamic. And it became difficult, particularly if you've got a campaign where each character is building up in level and power and getting towards the big bad. And you want some group cohesion, you want group tactics for them to be able to defeat a big bad boss at the end of the game. If you've got people coming in and going all the time, it becomes very difficult to do that. And nobody knows what skills the other person has and what they can bring to the party. So I decided that I would just go for, well, pay for the game. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get investment because people are going to pay money. So they are going to want to come back and play because they're paying for it. And with that money, I use that money to pay for my subscriptions on Roll20, to pay for all the books. So if I get a new player who wants to do a particular class and I don't have the book, I will go, hang on, tap away on my keyboard. I have the book now. You can have that class. And that way I can be the most professional DM I can and give them all of the tools that they might need to have a really, really good game. So I don't make really money out of the games. It's great that I get paid, but it really just funds my hobby. It just funds me being able to run the games and run the games really well.
Have you been able to get back into shops yet? I know that Australia and New Zealand have had very strict COVID policies as they were trying to squash the virus. Now that things are starting to open up, has Australia opened up? And are you back in a real in-person setting yet?
Yes, I am. We are back in a real in-person setting. It hasn't been that long. It's only been 3 or 4 months. Wow. But I am now back in an in-person setting. And running inside the game shop again. And that's great. I've taken my laptop in. They have a big screen up on the wall, and I use a HDMI cable to my laptop and I run it on Roll20.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's really great. They get to see the maps up on the wall. And then they just tell me where the figures move and I'll move them around and they get to see what's going on. And it's really good fun. I actually, I now do all my role playing on Roll20 simply because of the ability to be able to keep notes and keep characters. It was always hard as a DM when I was playing in store to prepare for particular character types a scenario which was going to challenge them, because I didn't necessarily know exactly what their characters, you know, they might in between sessions go away and level up, but I wouldn't find out until I got back to the shop to run the game to find out that they'd level up and taken this particular type of spell or taken this particular feat or whatever it might be. And that could be, oh, I hadn't accounted for that. That's really going to make the encounter way too easy for them now, and then have to try and change things on the fly. Whereas with Roll20, they can go away and do their level up in between, but I can log in and look at it and go, ah, right, they've taken that. Ah, I've got to change my scenario now to account for the fact that they're using this and make it a little bit more challenging.
You make such an awesome point that we haven't really discussed in any of these interviews, but with the ease that VTTs are, or virtual tabletops, that you can go and watch what your client, your player is doing and be able to mitigate that setting or mitigate that setup for your next session. And I think that that's important for our listeners, because there are clinicians who don't really know the game and they don't know how this works, but, and you know, like setup can be stressful, but knowing that you can mitigate all of that through things like Roll20 and other virtual tabletop programs makes this game a lot more manageable for any person going through the Therapeutic Game Master program, and having those tools readily accessible to be able to plop them up on a TV screen in a game shop is just, that's phenomenal. I love that. Are the kids or your players using tablets or something to update their character sheets?
Yeah, well, Roll20 has an app, so you can just download the app on your phone or on your...
It works now?
Yes, it's functioning. It's actually been released, officially released now.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you can get it from the Apple shop, and they've still got beta versions coming out with improvements, which if you're a pro subscriber, you get early access to. But they do have a released version of the character sheet, which anybody can use. So all my players have their character sheet. They can simply get on their mobile, their laptop, their iPad, whatever it might be, and open up their character sheet, make the roles. They all show up in Roll20, and I can make the adjustments to whatever monster they've hit on the fly without any issues, because I can see it all happening on my screen in front of me, and they can watch it all up on the big screen on the TV.
I was playing in Roll20 during COVID at lockdown, and everything that was being beta tested, it was so slow and laggy, and I did a beta testing on the iPad, and I was like, this is never going to work. And I'm so excited to know that it works, because I use a different VTT, which is fine. But I love that it is functioning and that people have full unbridled access to be able to have that in their hand. I mean, we get the devices in our hands are so powerful, and now we're just bringing one more tool to the DM's toolbox that I love, whether you're a therapeutic DM, a therapist, a clinician, a supervisor, a volunteer, or a professional DM, that those toolboxes are getting fuller and fuller and fuller. And I love it. And speaking of toolboxes, you are on the way to becoming a geek specialist, and you said you've taken a few trainings. Out of the few that you've taken, is there one that you have really just gravitated towards? Because you get to select them. There's the, you know, the 12 competency ones, but is there a competency that you've selected so far that you just were like, yes, I picked it and I love it?
I can't really say yet, because I've only done four out of the 12. So I've done a third, and I'm actually one of these people. There's the list on Geek Therapeutics that they've put out, which says, you know, these are the ones you need to do the cultural competencies, and it's written down in a list. And I went, right, well, that one sounds really interesting. Oh, that one sounds really interesting. Now I'm going to start at the top, and I'm going to work my way down one after the other. So I've been working through it sequentially. So there are a couple that I'm quite excited to do. But so far, I think the most interesting one for me, pardon me, has been anime.
Me too.
And yeah, I really love that. I do like anime. I watch it. My kids watch it a lot. So I'll sit down and watch it with them, you know. I've always been a big Studio Ghibli fan. Mm-hmm. So I've got most of the DVDs in my cupboard. I watch them with the kids. The kids love them. And there are some other mangas and anime that my kids have gravitated to. Pokemon being a big one and Dragon Ball Z being another one. I actually even went back and watched the original Dragon Ball before it had the Dragon mm-hmm. Ball Z on it. And it was very different. Yeah. Very different, but it was still great. And I really enjoyed that. So for me, learning the history of anime and the fact that it was developed in Japan after the Second World War as a way of rebuilding the country. And helping to rebuild the country was like a wow moment for me, because anime had always been just a fun thing for me. I mean, it had a lot of positive messages, always did, but it was always purely just a fun thing for me. And to learn that it was actually developed as a way of trying to help the country and the nation rebuild after this traumatic loss during the Second World War was really eye-opening and made me then go, that's why it's always so wow, that's really amazing. So I really did enjoy that one.
I haven't had anybody bring up the anime one. I never watched anime growing up. My brother did. I just didn't understand it. I'm a very like meat and potatoes girl, and I felt like anime was like corn and fluff. And so I started with that one because I wanted to really understand anime. And I watched it 3 times before I ever even took the exam, because I was heartbroken learning. I'm a Marine, so I served in the U.S. military, and we know so much of our history in World War II and all of the great wars. But to learn that a nation was being rebuilt on the back of a cartoon, and the idea of getting these publications out to show hope and security and foundation was mind blowing for me. And I'm super emotional just thinking about it, because I watched it 3 times because I didn't know the gravity of these little silly cartoons. And they're not little silly cartoons. They all are filled with a message. And sometimes it's political, and sometimes it's full of hope, or showing that you can be neuroatypical and still be successful, or you can be neurotypical and still have flaws, even though everybody thinks you're perfect. And it made me appreciate something that I didn't understand so much more in my, like deep within my soul, that when I took that exam, I felt very competent in that. And now I want to learn everything about what anime is and how it has raised generations of people. Because it's not just, I'm 36, and it's not just my generation who watched anime. It goes all the way back to 1947 and even in written before that. And it's generations of people who have grown up with, our generation grew up with Marvel and what two men wrote about the war and going on here, but Japan and China had the exact same thing. We just don't see it that way. And that is their Marvel, that is their DC, and that is their country coming back from something so catastrophic that the world fell. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I could talk about that one topic all day long. And I don't want to end it on a sad note. I don't want to end this on a sad note, but it's so prolific, and I'm so glad you brought that up. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. I really enjoyed that one too. And it really did open my eyes into how manga was created and why, and the powerful message that it can really deliver. The fact that it can bring back a nation from the brink of destruction and traumatic loss into one of the number one powers, you know, top five powers in the world now, is just incredible that it was built on the back of manga. And I think that, you know, a lot of parents complain about their kids watching manga all the time. But if they were to understand that they could use that manga as a way of teaching and how therapeutic it can be, that they really wouldn't mind kids watching manga as much as they did.
And in turn, this is something I actually, you reminded me that I want to bring up, that this could be something we can use in our teaching moments, is the birth of the kaiju films, with Godzilla in 1954 being an allegory for the nuclear bombs. And how, in general, Godzilla films each have, for the most part, you lose a little bit in the Showa era, but for the most part, they have a message to them about something either social, political, or emotional, like Biollante about loss and grief over a loved one, you know, stuff like that. But I love hearing, because Japan gave us so much great artistic interpretation of these deep emotional issues that U.S. comics couldn't address because of the comic board and the rules and regulations placed against comics during the 50s.
Yep.
Fed, you've been an absolute delight, and I hope that you want to come back. And I know the time difference is crazy, but I would love to sit and talk with you on so many other topics. We normally give all of our guests a moment to plug themselves, and I know that you're on the other side of the world, but if you could show or share with us where we're listening on an audio medium now, our listeners, if you could tell our listeners where they can find you, whether it's in Roll 20, if you have a DM handle on Instagram, please, this is your moment to shine and plug everything that you would want to plug to get people to find you.
Sure. Well, you can find me as the DM Fad, all one word. I go as by Fad or the DM Fad on all my media. So in Roll 20, I'm Fad. In Instagram, I'm the DM Fad. In Twitch, I am the DM Fad. Where else? On Facebook, I'm the DM Fad as well. So you can find me on as that. If you do a general search, you'll find me.
I already did, and I just followed you. So you're going to see Alicia, my last name, pop up. And there I am, and I will follow you. And I would love to talk to you more if you want to come hang out on any topic specific, not just the overarching theme of being a DM and a therapeutic DM, but on other topics that come up in your training. I would love to have you back. And I know that Cornell will too. And I'm going to take us out to a semi-close end and thank everybody for listening. And thank you for coming on at such a different hour and spending this last 40 minutes with us. And anybody who's out there who is listening, if you are a geek therapist, a social worker, any type of clinician, helping profession, doctor, or DM who does geek culture and therapy or services for people, please come chat with us. We'd love to hear what you're doing in your own spaces that are using geek cultural artifacts to help anybody further themselves on this human journey. If you would like to have that conversation with Cornell and I, please come send us an email at media@geektherapeutics.com. And with that, Cornell, take us out.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in here on the Geek Therapeutics Podcast. Again, I am Cornell. And with my co-host Alicia and our special guest Fad this week, we want to thank you for tuning in and listening. So make sure to listen in next week, same time, same channel. See you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.